Welcome to the Mozilla Digital Memory Bank Podcast, a production of the Center for History and New Media. I'm Ken Albers, and this week we will hear excerpts from an oral history interview with Zool developer Neil Deacon, recorded in June of 2006 by Olivia Ryan. Neil had some very interesting commentary on what it is like to be a Mozilla volunteer and the challenges of breaking into the developer community.
Well, initially it was because I was interested, I'm interested in UI, so I wanted to learn how to use this UI technology, like UI markup language and so on, and I wanted to learn it. So I thought, well, a good way of learning it is to write some documentation on it, which wasn't really available at the time. So I thought, well, we can sort of do two things here. I can write documentation for other people as well as try to learn it myself. I mean, it started out very small, and then it, now it's five times larger or 10 times larger or something. And that way I could learn the language and keep my interest in UI alive.
What did you find it, how did you sort of enter into the community as a volunteer? Was it sort of an easy thing to do, or were there certain barriers you sort of had to cross?
Yeah, it was hard because I'm fairly shy. And so, I mean, there's a barrier of trying to get, you have to kind of get involved on IRC and chat and all that kind of stuff.
Had you ever, at that point, used IRC?
No, I hadn't used that before, so it provided a big barrier. And of course, you've got these people. I mean, at that time, Mozilla was still a lot of Netscape people.
Right, so what year was this? Probably 98, 99?
Yeah, 99 or so.
99, okay.
I mean, I'd been reading stuff, as a read-only sort of user. I didn't actually contribute before that.
And how long were you doing the read-only before you...
Well, since they started, really. I mean, often. Not as much as later, but I just kept my interest going in the background, because it was sort of relevant to my job as well, in a sense, to keep up with what Netscape was doing, because that's what my job was. There was a lot of barrier with all the Netscape people. They did seem a little bit more, they knew what they were doing and all that, and I didn't, of course, so there's a bit of a barrier there. And it is sort of overwhelming, all these people that you don't know and all that, especially if you're, a quiet sort of person.
So did you sort of start off slowly?
Yeah, very slowly,
What were the first sort of contributions that you made?
Yeah, the documentation was first.
Yeah,
that was the first thing. And I just posted a message on the news group saying, I've written this documentation. At that time, it was about 12 pages or so. I mean, it's now about 70. And people said, this is great stuff. And that sort of encouraged me to keep going.
Olivia later asked Neil to comment further on the volunteer process.
What extent do you think Mozilla relies on the work of volunteers, and has that reliance changed over time?
I think it's definitely much more so now. When Netscape was pretty much owned, they pretty much did most of the decision-making and all that. And I think that made it very hard and very contentious with people trying to... get involved. I mean, because it was, there were a big company around it, or AOL even. So nowadays, Mozilla is a lot more open with that kind of thing. I mean, they invite volunteers to their developer days and so on. They definitely don't want to take over in any way. And there are quite a few people outside, especially in the QA. I mean, that's pretty much all done by volunteers, except for a small handful of people. I mean, there are certain things that the volunteers can't really do, like maintain all the servers and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of, they don't actually want to hire everybody from the community. But they have hired quite a few people that they thought were good, but they haven't done that for everybody.
Do you think that is volunteering sort of the best way, the best approach? Say you wanted to get hired, would you start?
Yeah, if you wanted to get hired, that's the best way, because it shows that you know what you're doing and you can get it, you know how to get involved and communicate with everybody. I mean, some people aren't, they're just, I mean, depending, I mean, obviously developers, that's the best way. I mean, if you're doing marketing or something, like, there's not really any way. Well, to some degree, but, I mean, some people in, like, more management positions would just get hired, which is, could be contentious to some of the volunteers or whatever. Because, I mean, there's new guys coming in at the higher levels of the corporation,
mm-hmm.
and that can sometimes, volunteers, who is this new guy who's telling us what features need to be implemented, that sort of thing. So they have to sort of balance that with making sure the volunteers do actually have more enough say. Because it feels a lot better when you sort of say, I made this or I decided that that's a good thing.
Toward the end of the interview, Neil speculated on how the open source development model might grow beyond the realm of software development.
It's possible. I think it might be hard to do that given sort of just the way that companies have historically worked, I mean, with trade secrets and all that kind of stuff. And it's probably harder to do that, especially in North America. I think it's probably a bit easier in Europe, I would say. I guess there's a lot of products that are made sort of with pieces by lots of companies working together. I mean, they're not necessarily open.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it really depends on how the company feels. I mean, some companies are a little more open in that, and I think having more open source and stuff might encourage. I mean, even Microsoft is now more sort of open than they were 5 years ago. I mean, and I think open source has probably been a big factor in that, and then the internet and all that stuff. Having people encouraging them to provide more of their various things and be more open and add like web logs and all that from their developers and so on. I mean, it used to be the case where companies wouldn't even be allowed to talk to people about anything they were doing, right? I mean, whereas now you often see that. I mean, sometimes it's limited, but sometimes they can get really open in that way, and I think people appreciate that kind of thing.
Do you think that this is sort of a trend that will continue, or I guess more broadly, what do you think the future is for open source?
I think that will continue. I mean, I don't see why it would disappear. I mean, it's not like it can really diminish in any way. I mean, it's not really gone too far yet, so I think there's still lots more it can go, places for it to go.
To hear Neil further discuss Mozilla and other topics, download the full oral history from the interviews section of the Mozilla Digital Memory Bank. Also available from the archive this week is the transcript of an extremely interesting interview with Mozilla volunteer developer Alex Vincent, conducted this month over Instant Messenger. Thank you for listening this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks with highlights from an interview with Tristan Nitot from Mozilla Europe. In the meantime, please help us collect the history of Mozilla, both from the developer and user perspectives. Visit mozillamemory.org or email us at mozmem@gmail.com. That's mozmem@gmail.com. And become a part of history by contributing your story to the Mozilla Digital Memory Bank.